Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Remarkably Me podcast. I'm your host, Anika Apple, and it is my pleasure and honor to support you on your healing journey through using the power of storytelling. Stories connect and they unite us. And what I love about the power of stories is that even where people have seemingly significant different backgrounds or perspectives of how they see the world, we can find common threads through stories. And as much as stories have the opportunity to unite us, they also have the opportunity to educate us and to strengthen us in our understanding and connection about the experiences that we have. Sometimes we can be in a place of assumption where we think everyone's experience and life's journey is just like ours. But in fact, all of us are a mixture of the different experiences that we've had, and there's something to be said for what's in our DNA, and there's something to be said for the perspective that we gain and how we choose the lens from which we choose to look at things as we go about our lives. So there's a lot of opportunity to heal, and there's a lot to be healed from. And our guest today is someone who has done incredible healing work and is doing the work to help facilitate that healing in others as well through her advocacy and through her personal storytelling and the platforms that she has created and been able to grace. So I am excited to bring to you Bethany Frazier, who is a sister of mine and who is I consider her part of my circle. And she also is a pretty phenomenal marketing genius, business development, public relations. Like, she's got the whole gamut under her belt. Anyway, we worked at the same company. And so I know some of the impact of some of the work that she was able to deliver there. And I'm pretty ecstatic about what she does and what she brings to the world. The other thing that is super special to me about Bethany is that she has a jewelry business called Otito, and one of the bracelets that I wear all the time came from her company, and quite frankly, I love it. So I love the story that she tells in this episode about where the name Otito came from and how it honors who she is and her journey and what she's committed to support in happening in the world. And I am most excited to have this conversation with her, where she takes you on a journey of her experiences. One in particular, as she talks about being adopted and identity and what her journey through being an adoptee and her experience of learning about her birth parents and so many other revelations throughout this time, how it has helped her to shape and continue to define the life that she leads today. In addition to standing in her own truth, and you'll hear her talk about truth, trust, and transparency because that is her mantra, she's also started a podcast called The Adoptee Diaries. Pause the video if you need to, pause the podcast, and go back to the streaming platform and make sure you subscribe. Her journey through advocacy for adoptees is so powerful. And what I love, and you'll hear us talk about in the episode, is that there's such a huge opportunity for all of us to learn and grow and experience parts of journey that we might envision are similar, or perhaps even assume that they are related to the experiences that we've had, yet not recognize how by simply trying to make it connect to your own experience, it invalidates the truth of what someone else's journey is. You'll hear Bethany talk a bit about that. And it also is good resonance for each of us to have as we listen to her story and as we think about the change in who we are being in the world. So I am honored to bring to you my sister friend, someone I love so, so, so dearly, and am so incredibly proud of the impact that she is making in the world through all of the different ways that she shows up for work. But most importantly, she's a mom of two and has a wonderful, loving partner, and is just a good human being. So I bring to you my good friend, Bethany Frazier. And thanks for joining us on the podcast today. Bethany, I am so excited to have you. Welcome to the Remarkably Me podcast. How are you today?
Thank you. I am so good. I am so happy to be here with you. Of course, I said yes. Of course, I'm nervous. I was telling you earlier, I know that you don't have to do any prep because everything's just channeled through you and I just am such a preparer. So my normal nerves are here, but I'm very happy to be here. You are amazing and awesome, and it's my privilege.
Well, as are you. And I'm just so excited for our listeners and those watching us to have the opportunity to get to know more about you. One of the things that I'll share is that Bethany and I are part of a couple of different groups together. And in many ways, we our lives are weaving more and more together. And I love that, I might say. But in the Beyonding community, Bethany and I met, gosh, it's been 3 years ago now, almost 4 years.
Almost four, yeah. Yeah. I think this year will be four.
It'll be 4 years this summer, right? And if you've ever connected with someone who you did not know, but you heard pieces of their story and who they are as, at their core came through, that was my experience at Bethany. And I can remember in one of our sessions, this place, the Beyonding community is a place of transformation. It is the safest place for transformation. And that is not just a tagline. It is the truth because we have transformed. I mean, in almost 4 years' time, we've left corporate, start businesses. Like there's been so much that has happened in our lives. But what I just remember is hearing your heart speak. And it was such a precious moment for me. I remember saying to myself, you were in California at the time, and I'm like, I could get on a plane right now just to go hug her in person because I just felt you. And as I have gotten to know you, what I've had the opportunity to witness is how you let your heart lead your work. And I think that is so brilliant. So I'd love it if you would take a moment and introduce yourself to those who are viewing, to our audience, just so they have an opportunity to hear a little bit more about you, and then we'll get into the story.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you. You know, I love being in your presence. So thank you so much. And you're right. I certainly let my heart lead once I was able to let it trump the fear or whatever it was. So I have not had a linear professional career. Nothing seems to be like just in an easy straight line. And I am, let's see, I guess professionally, I'll start by saying I've had a 20 plus wonderful corporate life. I was climbing the ladder and doing the things. I've had several different marketing and sales jobs and whatnot. And like you, mid-2022, post-pandemic, after moving and this and that, and marrying and divorcing, and, you know, life was lifing all over the place. But professionally, I think a huge pivot for me, several pivots along the way and several big things along the way. But I think for this audience, one of the, I think, reasons our paths crossed is, like you said, four whatever years ago, I had a wonderful friend that was like, I think you need to come join me on this wonderful community I'm creating. And I was like, no, not me, you know, and I landed there, thank goodness. And I realized how much help I actually really did need to move from like this sort of stuck place. Circumstances had me angry and bitter, and I needed help to get out of that place, hence where we met in the community.
Right, right.
Fast forward, move, divorce, all these changes, pandemic, George Floyd, the summer of 2020, et cetera. I got what everybody else, you know, that has reported out got, which was I'm in these spaces that are not working for me. I was super uncomfortable. As I started becoming more self-aware throughout my like personal journey, professionally, I started to become more uncomfortable in spaces that were not like created to support me. Mm-hmm. And ultimately in 2022, I left corporate. The day that I sort of separated mutually with my corporate at the time employer, I got a phone call that my dad was getting rushed to the hospital. And I was able to not even like moan too much more about like the corporate separation, because then my dad became like my focus. Drove 4 hours, sat with my dad for about 12 hours, him and me in the room, and he quietly passed away. So I had so much like happen in perspective that made that corporate separation like, yeah, that's it. I'm done. So I'm sure we'll get into it, but at that moment and throughout the grief and whatnot, so many different things happened, which ultimately landed me on where I am today professionally. I run my own marketing company. I run my own jewelry e-commerce boutique. And last year I launched my podcast called The Adoptee Diaries. And I know we'll get into it. So none of it could be possible without you and all our wonderful community's support. But that's in a nutshell professionally who I am. Personally, I am a mom of two beautiful boys, 16 mm-hmm. and 21, and I will definitely say a lot of my decisions, probably not every single one of them, but many of my decisions rest in those little boys, right, that I brought into this world, and I'll be darned if I wasn't going to do my best to make sure I am the best mom I can be for them, which made sure that I was also then the best Bethany I can be for me. And that journey for me really happened starting, like, I can say when I turned 40, I kind of had that moment. So all that led me here.
Well, and I can remember you in our early time together, you had Mama Bear as your title. Yeah. So where they see Bethany's name there, it said Mama Bear, and which just is so salient as I have gotten to know you. First of all, your sons are amazing. But just the passion that you lead with in parenting, your commitment to be there for them and to set an example. And I know we'll talk, I'm sure we'll come up in some more of the conversation. But what's really interesting is that even at the time of this of our recording this episode, we had an earlier episode come up where a guest talked about how parenting is one of those things that we prepare the least for, but it has to be one of the most important things that we do in our lives. Mm-hmm. And as I say that to you, I'm thinking about the conversion of a couple different ways that decisions around parenting have impacted your life. Let's talk about that for a moment. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're going to just jump right in. When I think about some of the challenging decisions that you've had to make for your children, whether it was moving or other dynamics, what are some of the things that you've used as a compass to help guide your decision-making, to protect and support them? Love to just hear your thoughts.
So I will say definitely for me, like my kids are the one, I feel super untethered at times, like throughout my life. I don't feel necessarily connected to culture. I don't feel necessarily connected to immediate family. Going through divorce, you lose your family like this, right? My in-laws were my family and then they're gone. I've lost separation from friends. And, you know, there's just been some thread of like loss, which made me feel a little bit alone, I believe, along the way. So then you give birth to these little babies, and these kids have been, they're my one constant. So they're like the one constant that they're not going anywhere. They are dependent on me until they're, you know, young men, which they're becoming. So I think that's what shifted it for me, where I was like, something clearly was like, these are the little things that you have. Like nobody else is as dependent or as tied to you as these kids. And I know we'll get into like I do believe my journey of search and reunion and my experience of being adopted and all the work that I've done sort of to heal and still heal from that identity that I hold. I think all that heightened my almost like obsession of, or commitment is probably a better word than obsession, of getting it right, being a mom. Mm-hmm. Super, you know, maybe other divorced parents might feel this, but I was parenting from guilt for multiple reasons, fear, they're going to be mad at me. Guilt, yep. We're divorced. Guilt, I keep moving. Oh, financial. Like, there were so many like bits that really attacked my my confidence as it being a parent. So throughout the way, therapy, different work, working with different people. One in particular was our wonderful dear friend, Marla Teolia, going through Marla's core identifying, like with her guidance, I was able to, I was living in California at the time and specifically said, my family, my integrity, and my personal growth are going to be my three like total points that I'm going to check all my decisions against. And at that time, I was doing this like bi-coastal DC, California thing. I was just freshly divorced. I was, the kids and I'm flying everywhere. They're flying back and forth. You know, dad was East Coast. I was West Coast. Mm-hmm. And it clicked after hearing Marla work me through what my core values are. I'm like, I can't sustain this lifestyle of bi-coastal separation anymore. Yeah. So I guess to answer your question, it was setting those core values that really did it for me. I said there was a lot of transformation for me in my 40s. I really screwed up a lot in my 20s. I had my youngest when I was 25. I got pregnant with him. I was not yet married. So, you know, again, a lot of the adoptee story at this moment, since we're having this conversation, a lot of my decisions now also come from that adoptee identity healing that I've recently been introduced to. Yeah. And I've learned so much for other adoptees, how this plays. It doesn't have to be adoptee, but I'm just using it as an example. A lot of the things that we go through when our kids are that age that we were when we had a thing like occur or happen, it impacts us as parents. It almost triggers. I'm not going to get this all right, but it triggers something in us. And then for me, my like default trigger is super anxious, like, mm-hmm. like shaky, anxious, nervous, clam up kind of thing. So I can feel it when it's coming. And now I've like learned some ways to get around it. But regardless, in terms of the parenting piece, messing up with my kids in multiple ways and being able to actually now come back and apologize and say, gosh, I am really sorry that this happened. I can specifically remember a few things where I needed to apologize as being a parent to them would probably be one thing. And I don't want to feel like that anymore. Yeah. So I make decisions now that don't put me in the position of feeling bad as a mom.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I did was really identify that one of my core values is my immediate, my family, and my family as described is my two boys.
Yeah. I want to jump in for a moment. And there are a couple things I want to highlight. One, my mom, who is a therapist, said to me, and she tells all of her clients, all of her friends, all of my friends, everybody, she's like, she used to say to me, make sure you save money for when you get older because you're going to need therapy. You'll need a lot of therapy. So and I'm true. Like, I'm not going to need therapy. You're amazing. I'm on therapist number three or four. I don't know.
Totally.
But, you know, it's interesting when you talk about identity and the connection to how you then parent, because as a child of divorced parents and they had a very amicable separation. They showed up at functions together and things like that. So definitely came together consistently to parent me. There was still this thing up in my mind about having a broken family, right? Mm. And that became part of the identity. And one of the driving forces for me, I remember part of my conversation with my ex-husband when we were going down the road of getting married, and we're like, he also was a child of divorced parents. And we're both like, we're not doing that divorce thing. Like, it's just, it's not happening. Like if we're in, wheels fall off, right? We didn't know all of the other things turns that would happen in life because you don't enter in with the expectation of that. Yet coming out of it holds so much grief. And for me, there was a part of it is like shame looking at my children of like, I failed at this. I couldn't, you know, keep it together. I couldn't stay. I could not figure out a way through the differences that happened between their father and I. And there's something to be said for the sense that we make around our identity, what we want to be a part of our identity because we experienced it and it was good, and the things that we experienced that were maybe we didn't feel were as good or favorable, because you can't truly see the way that those things are going to fuel who you become. Talk a little bit about that point. How the journey that you have as an adopted child have evolved. I want to say how you have healed some of what happened in your past through your parenting. And then we can go through the adopted journey. But I feel like that's such a salient thing, because your own healing has come as a part of the way that you mother.
Yeah. Let me just think how best, like where to start to answer that. You know, because my adoptee identity wasn't something I even would like, it wouldn't even register with me to have that conversation or even make that mention. I would mention that along the way if it warranted. So for example, something that, especially if you look like me, somebody's always like, well, so where are you from? And I'm like, no, I know what you're really asking. You're asking me, what's my ethnicity? Well, guess what? I don't know, because I'm adopted and my parents don't know, which is what they told me. So I had no answer to this question for, you know, 43 years of my life. And when people would ask me this question, I went through phases. So there was times where I would just answer it like, I don't know. I have no idea what I am. I don't know what my ethnicity is.
Yes.
And then there was times in my life, probably from 18 to 21, 22, I'd just make it up. I was a flight attendant. If I was in Brazil, I was Brazilian. If I was in Jamaica, I was Jamaican. Like, boy, you know, cuando estoy en Brasil, solamente hablo español. I mean, I was like, come I will on. Learn Spanish. I will learn Spanish. My college boyfriend called me his Peruvian princess. Here, I'll be Peruvian. Like, I was kind of like chameleoned around. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, but it really did hurt. Mm. I just didn't deal with it because I don't like hurt.
Yeah.
But you know, year after year after year of not knowing and not knowing. So there's a few things. So I did do the ancestry. I have a wonderfully supportive partner now. He encouraged me to do the ancestry DNA test. I never really considered it too much, but one of the things that I always go back to when people now are like, why'd you do it? There's tons of reasons why I ultimately did it and I shouldn't have waited so long, but I remember hearing my now 16-year-old, when he was little, maybe 8, 10, tell somebody we were El Salvadorian. And I was like, we're not El Salvadorian. And he said, how do you know? Mm. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, you don't know what you are. So how do I know what I am? I'm El Salvadorian. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's starting to do it.
He's starting chameleon to too.
Yeah. And we have a very like bubbly personality. But, you know, I was like, gosh, if it bothers me, does it bother him? So I started to do that with my two boys, and my two children have very different personalities. And I could see like ways where I didn't want them to have this burden in the event it was going to be a burden to them too. So I sort of wanted to stop it there and break it off. So that's like kind of one thing that it's challenging because I don't want to assume that they have these feelings I have. I'm actually probably far more sensitive than either of them are. I'm so happy. My little guy is just like, everything rolls off his shoulder, cool as a cucumber. And I don't want him to have this anxiety. So I just wanted to make sure that I was like removing that from the table and I could answer. Another thing that sort of happened because of my adoptee healing journey and search and reunion was these words kept coming up for me. So now I kind of run on this platform or speak on this platform of truth, trust, and transparency in adoption, because we can't lie. And if we don't have the information, we'll make it up. So I was actually speaking at a conference last March, and I came home and I was like talking about what I was talking about. And I remember looking at the kids and I was thinking, wait a second. There's a few times where I'm encouraging people to be honest in their parenting, whether they're a prospective adoptive parent, a foster parent, kinship provider, whatever. You guys be honest. But then I was like being honest with myself. I wasn't always honest with my kids.
Wow.
And this just happened like last year, right? I mean, I just when I think I've got it, I'm like, oh man, something else hits me. I am not a perfect parent. And so there's a handful of things that I've like learned along the way that I've learned to have the tough conversations. I used to always avoid tough. I don't like conflict or messy or icky or uncomfortable. But here I was saying, hey, parents and prospective parents, have a productive, honest conversation, even if it's uncomfortable, because your kids will be hurt and they will find out the truth, especially in this day and age with technology. Do not hurt your children. We are being hurt because you're choosing to lie, because you are scared we're going to go run back to our birth parents. But I wasn't operating from that place in all cases. So it gave me an opportunity to have a conversation with my kids. Sure. And I really deeply try to have those tough conversations and ensure that we have open communication. Another thing that there's probably like two examples that I have, I'll give one. Because maybe your listeners don't know my story, I am adopted. I am biracial. I found out I had African ancestry in 2020 officially when I did my ancestry DNA. My parents raised me as white. I checked the white box until somewhere around 18, 20 years old, I was like, are you sure I'm 100% Caucasian? You know, when I started to sort of, I questioned it throughout, but you believe your parents. And then when I got old enough to sort of see the world, travel the world as a flight attendant, I was like, I look like a whole lot of people that are not white. So when I was raising my babies who are mixed, their father's black, I'm raising them thinking they're mixed children. And Trayvon Martin got killed when my oldest, who's now 21, I think was 12 at the time. And I paralyzed myself on how to have this conversation with my son. The only thing I did was operate from fear. I'm like, you can't go outside. Mm-hmm. You can't walk down the street. Yeah. Like I was panicking, but I never had any like productive conversations because I had no idea how to have them because I grew up as a white girl.
Right.
And I was denied. He'd say, Mom, I'm the only black kid in my class. Mom, the kids are touching my afro. Mom. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, they're not. No, they're not. There's no black people here. Oh, stop. I was pushing him off the way my parents pushed me off. Wow. But I didn't realize when he was 12. I realized that when he was 18. So I did have a lot. I have no problems apologizing. I have no problems asking for forgiveness. And I have no problems forgiving. And I had to exercise all of them. Like as I started to really unravel this adoption story. So that's my one example. My other kind of nugget that I'll drop, I'm getting all like heavy now. When my kids were almost 3 and almost 8, their father got what was drunk driving, struck a bicyclist and killed him. So my children's father was incarcerated for about 5 years of their very young life. So I would have thought that that was like the biggest transformational, horrible, like implosion in my life that set me on a different track. Wow. I was blaming him for all of that uproot chaos that happened.
Right.
What I now know is like I had chaos in utero, right? With my birth mother. Mother. There's so much stuff and it's just the life that I was given. So if I start to sort of reframe and I'm saying all these things to say my kids have been through a lot and I am not here to make their job harder. I am not here to act like I'm perfect. Mm-hmm. I am not here to avoid tough conversations, which I probably still do all the time. I mean, it's so hard for me to like go for the hard stuff because I don't like difficult. I want everything peachy and rosy and everybody happy and fun. But you know, I have to go there. So that part of that is like, I'm going to sometimes be sad or mad or upset or anxious. And now I'm just trying to accept my emotional like availability as a superpower that is telling me something versus I'm weak and I'm anxious and I need to be like medicated. So I'm really changing this and it's all a new conversation for me because this is all really new sort of uncoverings for me. So Is that it? I don't even know if I answered your question there, but no. Somewhere in there, my point is I'm really invested in trying to get it right with my kids, failing miserably on occasion and apologizing for it so we can all learn and move on. They can learn from my mistakes if I share them with them.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's our journey of souls, period, right? Is to share our experiences, to be brave and courageous enough to tell the truth, and to heal together. Because the reality is, even when you are going through the experience, we often think what we're going through is ours and ours alone. Mm-hmm. But you're in community, whether it is your family, you know, as a parent, whether it is in the people who you operate businesses with, we are all in community. There is connection that's happening all the time. And our unhealed spaces impact other people. Oh, yeah. There's no way that they can't. And so when we acknowledge and recognize it, we are creating this space for all of us to heal our relationships between each other and the things that we don't even know or didn't see that impacted them. I want to go back to you talking about the distress in utero. I don't know that you use the word distress, but distress. The other thing I thought about
I think I said chaos. I've had chaos.
Yeah.
I thought that I was pinpointing this one moment in my life in 2010 as like the big thing. But truth is, researchers, data, and science tell me that was not your first big thing in your whole life, right? If I'm being honest, there's other things. And yes, in utero counts.
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely. And you think about the traumas that have happened in our ancestral lineage and how they carry on for, you know, multiple, like at least three generations. I know that there are studies that confirm that. I believe there are studies that say that it's even more than that. So it certainly matters significantly. And it's interesting because as I was listening to you, I was like, it's an example of wanting to find comfort. And you described like wanting to keep peace and having things be, and it's like that in utero experience is one where, you know, I think we generalize or identify it as a place of comfort. People talk about like going back to their mother's womb or like, you know, you're in child's pose and it's like that reminder of being swaddled. Yet, what happens when that is not there and the body keeps score and there is some memory of that experience? When we were preparing for this session, and when I say preparing, I mean really having our sister talk, because we didn't prepare. We have no, like, you know, we flow as God is flowing. But one of the things that you shared was around you're doing the work to create the adoptee's diary and to share your story and to connect with others and community. And it struck me as you were saying that like this part of your identity and experience that had been so painful and the thing that created this disconnect or maybe stirred up the desire for belonging has now become a place of belonging. It has now become a place of where you have found community and sense of self. And as you were talking about in utero, I'm like, and this is kind of the same thing with seeking comfort, except that you are creating it. You're creating comfort in your experience and, you know, creating comfort through the community that you're building. Talk a little bit more about the adoptee diaries.
Adoptee diaries. yes. Adoptee diaries. So yeah, it's kind of, I'm still a little mind blown, to be honest, that I have a podcast, that I'm doing this thing. I'm not sure I saw myself like in this role, and I certainly had a lot of encouragement. So from the community, the beautiful community that we happen to be both part of, I have a very supportive partner. My kids, since I've been honest with my kids about everything, I spill the beans on the pod about how I feel. But what happened specifically was in that summer of 2020, I did my ancestry DNA test, spit in the tube in like, let's say the end of June. By August, beginning of August, end of July, had my results.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
Stayed up for 72 hours, like straight, like a, you know, I was totally investigating my whole entire family tree and trying to put all these things together. I started with names and outreach and all this mm-hmm. stuff. And while I only did the ancestry DNA initially, so I thought, to do my ethnicity, I wanted to be sure in who I was and stand up as like this proud woman of color and Black woman, mixed woman. And I just always felt like an imposter in all the spaces I was in. So originally I was like, I need to know my ethnicity. It matters. It's on every single checklist in every single application.
Right, right.
Everybody's asking me. It mattered to me. Especially that summer of 2020, it mattered to me a lot because I was like going to protest in March and I needed to know who I was. It felt very mm-hmm. important for me and my kids. When I started piecing together actual people that I could be related to, I was like, it was super overwhelming initially to put this all together, but I landed on somebody who sent me to somebody who sent me to somebody. And sure enough, within 2 weeks of getting my DNA results, I was in reunion with my birth father.
Wow.
Yes.
In 2 weeks
time. It took about 2 weeks since I had my ancestry DNA results. So all in all, my life completely changed in like 6 weeks.
Wow.
And even just to be connected to this like stranger, right, whose blood I carry, I felt like some sort of connection. I felt a sense of belonging to a culture, to a mm-hmm. family, the way that mm-hmm. he was open and came to me and was like, here's the story. You know, I felt worthy finally, like, oh, somebody in my entire life mm-hmm. has said, here is the story. Here is who you are. Here is who we are. Here's who you come from. He gave me a picture. I showed you before we started the video. Like, he sent me a picture of my ancestors. This is the farthest. I think this is like the farthest back picture that his family has. And wow. They copied it and gave it to me. Like, mm-hmm. here's who you come from. And nobody ever did that.
Mm.
Like, nobody ever did that for me. So even my birth mother, who I am in reunion with, and I had been at this point for like 15 years, she would tell me nothing about my birth father. Like, everybody kept this a secret. Now I forgot your original question because I've gone off on this tangent. The question is...
About starting the adoptee diary.
Adoptee, of course.
Yeah.
So that experience of meeting him, going through this search and reunion, and I did all this in a vacuum, right? I did not tell my parents who raised me, my adopted parents. I did not tell them I was doing this. They were older. My mother has dementia. My dad was like angry because he is my mother's caregiver. I mean, they were getting old. And I just didn't ever think I had their support on this conversation. Hence part of the problems. But I reached out. I honestly, Anika, I have to call it divine intervention. I have no recollection of why, but after all this occurred with my DNA and my reunion with my birth father and his warm welcome and all the things happened, I wound up looking up in, I guess, probably Googling local adoption agencies, and I called one. And I was like, hi, I'm in my 40s. I just did a search and reunion. I just found this thing out. I don't know what to do with this information. My parents are aged and cognitively impaired or wouldn't. I don't know what to do. I had no idea what to do, but something made me call. I cannot tell you. It was no person. I don't know who did it, but I called and they said, tell us your story. Mm-hmm. So I started talking to them and they were like, they basically said, we need you to speak up about your story so we, an adoption agency who are placing children with families, can do our jobs better. So we don't hide the truth. Yeah. We have educational classes. So I was immediately introduced to this entire community of adoption agencies, social workers, practitioners, lawyers, therapists. I mean, I'm talking, they call it the adoption and foster constellation
mm-hmm.
because it's like so vast. And by the way, it's like a $1 billion industry. Yeah. So people are making so much money in the industry. There is so much pain in the industry. It mm-hmm. is an industry. It isn't a transaction. And I am at the center. We are at the center of it because yeah. I was born. Lawyers got paid. Parents got babies. Agencies got paid. And I started to really, I was like, when I get excited and I get an idea and I start like, I was like, something's happening. Like, why am I getting all this information? Mm-hmm. And I was just like, notebooks, calling, emailing. So remember, I met my dad in 2020.
Right.
I'm going to say summer of 22, probably. So about a year later, I was already then starting to talk to different sort of nationwide adoption agencies about my story. I was starting to say yes, because I didn't want to be, I didn't think I would be a speaking on this. Mm-hmm. But then I realized these people are like asking me to speak on this. And there's little kids like me that are out there that are being lied to. Ooh, this is the part that always gets me. Okay. Summer of, right. And just as a reminder, because I said this in my intro, but just to sort of bring it back because it matters. In 2022, when I was leaving corporate and I got that phone call that my dad was going to the hospital, totally unexpected. We thought it'd be fine. He was not. He did transition 2 hours after this man who raised me, who I was very close to, died. I went over to my aunt and uncle's, not really my aunt and uncle, but his best, they're my parents' best friends. So they grew up with me, my aunt and my uncle. And I said, you know, I never told mom and dad, I didn't think they could handle it, but I did my ancestry DNA and I am telling them that I did this. And my aunt says to me, oh yeah, we knew. And I said, what do you mean you knew? You knew that like I didn't look like I was white totally? She's like, no, we knew. And so it was 2 hours after my dad, who raised me, who I'm very close to, apple of the man's eye,
right,
died. And I am in grief. And I just watched the first person in my life die.
Right.
I found out that he knew the entire time from the second the adoption agency in Western New York called him in 1976 that I was biracial and chose to hide it. Mm-hmm. Likely because my grandfather wasn't going to accept it. But that's a whole nother episode. Mm. So I say all that to say the pain that I then felt on top of like everything else, I was like, I was lied to. I felt gaslit, lied to. I started to really rack my head. So I was in this space and I needed help. And the way I found help was to source other, through these adoption agencies, they were like, well, you should look at Angela Tucker and April Dinwiddie. And there's these people that exist that are speaking out on their adoptee experience. And I said, really? Angela Tucker was a transracial adoptee, a black baby adopted by a white family. She's written a documentary about it. She's written a book about it. April Dinwiddie, mixed white parents, talking about her experience. And just one after another, and I found myself in this adoptee community. And I realized some of us speak out, some of us don't speak, some of us have, you know, whatever the case may be, but I felt very moved to talk about it. So yes, I entered sort of the speaking circuit in terms of the different conferences that exist and workshops and training sessions that exist, but I also saw a need to like create my own platform so I could talk about what I wanted to talk about, because there's a whole range out there. Some people are really angry. One thing is I will not judge any other, I will not judge anybody else's story. Some kids have been abused. Some of them are just gut curdling. I had a lovely, beautiful family that gave me this privileged life, and yet and still, as close and as great and as wonderful as I can say we were, the truth is my dad and mom chose to hide something from me, which mattered to me because I asked them my whole life. Mm-hmm. So I just added my name to the, I guess, mix of brave people that were talking about their experiences, because I do believe, as I saw recently in this testimonial, there are other people that are out there that might consider searching, that might be scared to speak, that might feel like they don't belong and need to find identity and belonging. Like, how do you do that when you're totally not belonging anywhere, right? It's a lot, but thank you for letting me share. That is why I did the podcast, to make a more space for adoptees to feel connected and safe, and more space where, prospective and current adopted and foster parents can get reminded all the time. Like we are the center of this story. And you have to be honest with us or we'll make up stories. You know, let me tell it. I was a Peruvian princess and my mother was like Vanessa Williams. She couldn't handle me because she was Miss Universe. Like I would tell the stories and the stories. Yeah. And then until I saw my kid telling a story one day, right?
And then that brought you to the realization of what was happening, like that coping, right? Well, and I love it because, you know, again, like the journey for the genesis for this podcast was God saying, create this podcast. But it was very divinely given to me that it was about healing through the power of storytelling. And that's exactly what you're doing through your podcast, telling your story, helping other people find healing, helping them find connection in the same way that you found it with the women who had gone before you and were sharing their stories. And it's so powerful. As you were talking, it reminded me of someone who's really, really close in my life. And back around the same time in 2020, we were having a conversation. She is mixed and younger generation than I. And she was just talking about the experience of being with part of her family and them not recognizing the other side of who she is, the other part of her, and feeling like disappointed and hurt. And it's just, it's as I was listening to you, it's like there's so many parts of this where not allowing the whole person to be seen. We cannot see the impact that has. And so I'm grateful for you sharing the stories and creating comfort, not just for adoptees and those who are working closely to support the community, but for people as a whole. Because where we don't have the experience or knowledge or consideration for people whose stories and journeys are not like our own, we have to seek that out to create the collective kind of understanding and love that should exist. Because unfortunately, people tend to be very myopic with how they look at other people's struggle. Like all struggle, all trauma, all experiences are relative. There are some that people talk about more frequently, so it becomes more of a common understanding. But that doesn't mean that anything else that anyone has experienced is ever less than should be minimized in any way.
Yeah. I have to say a couple things based on that for sure. I remember when I started, and you know, there's a common theme amongst adoptees that had healthy, loving, supportive, like privileged families within us. We feel almost guilty because there are some that weren't so lucky, right? So there's this sort of survivor's almost mentality that exists. And I didn't really know about all that until I started hearing other people's stories that were really horrible with horrible abusive families that they were placed in and, you know, just terrible, terrible stories. And I was like, well, gosh, who am I to like bring up my trauma, right? If I had no abuse. And so I did a little bit of that sort of with myself, like, well, you don't really have this like bloody horrible story, right? And I really quickly landed on like, I hope I'm like this anyway, but I'm not going to judge anybody's anything. I am not going to judge the way you, that's why this political divisiveness in the world today is super uncomfortable for me. I do not understand why my neighbor cares what's going on in my house. Like I don't care what's, so I get myself stuck there. And I've applied that personality trait of mine applies to this community of adoptees too. There's one that I can think of in particular. The Outspoken Adoptee is her Instagram handle. And when I first saw her, she puts out a lot of content and it was almost uncomfortable for me to watch initially because what she is saying is so upsetting about the experience of adopting. Like she's like, this is a transaction where one person is buying somebody else's baby. And the way that she sort of talked about it initially when I first arrived on her page, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're saying that out loud kind of thing. And it was a little bit mixed with, I've never thought about that. Mm-hmm. But I quickly landed on, you know what, I'm going to watch you intentionally and listen to you and learn from you too, because you're one of the people that I want to, I've said I'm doing this for us. And right. I can't pick it. I'm not only doing it for us that have good, warm, fuzzy things to say. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's for all of us. And I want to amplify her. And I watch her take some serious verbal social media abuse from people that don't like what she's saying, that are not adoptees, that maybe are parents, that are very nasty. And I feel very strongly, and I'm bringing her up on purpose, because the point, like you just made, her experience is her experience. She's being brave enough to talk about it. Yep. She's trying to heal and live her life to the best of her ability. I believe she's a parent. I mean, you talk about wanting to hug me all those years ago through the thing. I always am like, who are you? Where do you live? I need to find you. Like, I want to create retreats for people like her and bring in people like you so everybody can be whole and heal in a room where we get to pour into these people. I mean, her pain is all I see is pain, and I want to take it away. And yes. I can't understand how other people throw the fuel to her pain. And I literally am like, you literally are speaking your story. Who is to deny you? Who is to say that you're... So it's a very, 100%. It is a challenging space, but to your point, totally. Her journey, my journey, everybody's journey is their journey. And I just feel like if we were just a little bit more empathetic about other people's stories, no matter what they are, wouldn't we just have like a little bit more kindness? Yes. I don't want to sound Pollyanna, but I'm really wanting to do that. So I love this girl now, right? I mean, I was like, I was appalled because I was raised and there's a narrative. They tell us we're fortunate, we're lucky. Well, guess what? My birth father doesn't think I'm lucky, right? He's wanted me. I was taken from him. Mm-hmm. So when this outspoken adoptee speaks, now that I have the knowledge and the experiences and the information and the facts that I have, she is totally speaking facts. Yeah. There are people that are raising other people's stolen babies. It's true.
Yeah, it is true. And this is why our voices have to get more attuned to speaking truth.
Yes.
Because I think about how we have, you and I are no strangers to this, how we have become comfortable with making everything nice.
Oh, yeah. I'm a recovering positivity person.
Mm-hmm. Right? And even if I think about some of the things we've had to do in our workplaces and things like that, it's like, you can smooth it over. You know mm-hmm. the right things to say. Bethany, you know the words to use. It's like, there is that. And part of the problem, I know when we were going through the social unrest, and I really heightened the time around George Floyd's murder, there was so much heaviness in that time. And I just remember so many people, I had an outpouring of a lot of people in particular that I've worked with in the past who were like, I'm so touched by the content that you're sharing. But I never knew, as close as we were, I never knew you felt that way or that you experienced that or like some of the things. And I think I posted something about similar to what you talked about with your son about like our not letting AJ go outside and not wear a hoodie and all this, like in the end, how just increasingly tense we were. And then you can't tell him why he can't go out in his Oak Brook, Illinois neighborhood where we're one of three Black families, right? And he's like, why can't I go walk the dog? Like, you walk the dog every day. Like, what's the problem? But I'm like, no, I'm terrified. I don't want anybody to think you don't belong here in our $500,000 house and everybody else is in their $500,000 houses and whatever. Like, it's crazy to me that we had gotten to this place. And the resonance that I had is like, I'm like, why are all these people asking me these questions? Not that I did not want to share, because it gave me a platform and an opportunity to share and help them gain understanding. And they were coming from a place of being genuine, which I know is not everybody's experience.
Yes, yes.
But what I realized is that we stopped telling our stories. And what happens a lot of the time is that people get exhausted after telling their story when it feels like no one hears them.
Oh, yeah.
When it feels like people are not open to the possibility, like the woman that you mentioned, that her story is her truth. And so we end up having a lot of this feeling of yelling in the darkness, and then people just stop talking. And then we go through an experience like we did as a country, where there is this dynamic of all of these things that have happened. And people are like, what do you mean there's racial tension? I don't know, Bethany. As a mixed woman, is there racial tension where you grew up in a family that for whatever reason felt they needed to protect you? My assumption that maybe that may not be right, but they wanted to give you the best, and their feeling was like, and it, this part of who you are that people are not going to obviously see because your birth parent, your birth father was not in the picture. Maybe it will create an easier life for you. I'm like totally pontificating, but like, that's the kind of story that comes up in my mind. Right.
I definitely put a positive spin on it, and then I had to work through the alternate possibility that it isn't. Hey, maybe these people just racist. I was like, maybe you are absolutely racist. And I guess, you know, this is sort of what I, because we don't know. I am fortunate to have now reunion with both my birth mother and my birth father. So I know my story. I know the circumstances around my birth. I know why I was relinquished, and I know it stayed, you know, I know my whole story. A lot of people don't, though, and I didn't for 43 years, and we really make it up. I guess because of my personality, I naturally make like, oh, it's good. I make it a good sort of imagine it. A made up story. I try to make it like a good made up story. But the truth is, I don't know. And the truth is, it's painful to not know. And I think I'm still like in the process of both grieving and being mad at my dad, who now I can't even ask. But, you know, I have conversations with him. I have his ashes. He sits up there. So every once in a blue moon, I'm like, hey, dad, you know, jerk, I love you. You know, and ultimately, because I have this huge adoption constellation that exists, and there's different lessons for each player in the constellation, I love my birth. I love my parents. And me meeting my birth parents did not change that.
Yeah.
Right? And so don't lie or withhold information for fear that we could leave you, not love you less, like none of that stuff. It's just, I think with help, and if you need help because everybody can't communicate, then get help. There are, I had no idea that there's actual specialists, people that can help you heal, people that can help you through search and reunion, people that can help you identify core values so you can ensure that you're being true to yourself.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'll bring up also Dr. Marielle Bouquet, who, do you know Dr. Bouquet?
Her name is so familiar. I feel like she may have been on when we were doing our podcast.
She is amazing. She just published a book called Break the Cycle, and she's a Dominican, African, beautiful woman who researches. She's a doctor who researches intergenerational trauma.
Mm. Yeah, we did talk about this when we were prepping.
So you were talking, and you were talking, I'm sure I brought her up with you before, but you were talking earlier about like having generations of trauma in our DNA. Like we have our grandmother's DNA.
Sure do.
So whatever grandma went through, we have potentially passed on to our kids. 100%. Because we have them in our eggs, and we have them in our DNA that we then put them into our children.
100%.
It's just wild. And something she told me, which is totally fascinating to me and totally speaks to your point, and it's science. So anybody that's listening that doesn't believe me, it's scientifically proven. A good test on cortisol levels of Holocaust survivors, great, like grandchildren, right? I might not have the exact, like, I don't know if it's the great-grandchildren or the grandchildren, but whatever it is, the heightened cortisol levels in Holocaust survivors' descendants is totally undeniably higher than somebody that was not in the Holocaust. Meaning we could feel what they went through right now in my daily activity. So if there's a little tremor there and my life implodes because my husband strikes a bicyclist and goes to prison and now I'm a single mother and I am on a rocky road anyway. Like, so, exactly. You know, and you have to do all this work to figure out like what the heck happened and what rifts are there. And it does, I love the word excavation now. I keep hearing it. Dr. Bouquet said it first. I've heard you say it. I've heard some other people say it. And it's true because it's like literally almost digging up the ghosts. Mm-hmm. But when you're adopted and you don't know those ghosts, what do you do and how do you heal? And I think that's like such a mission of my work right now to have these conversations. Let's talk so you're in community and you're not alone. And then also let's figure out how you can like begin to be whole and heal if you don't have the information because nobody's given it to you or because your state's adoption agency is closed and you legally, somebody just got you, changed your name and erased your back story. Mm-hmm. So you can't even excavate. We have to work so hard to excavate. So Dr. Bouquet's work is really crazy important work and she also, so she's like, this is here and let's talk about how you heal from it.
Mm-hmm. And what I will tell you divinely is that one of the things that God said very clearly to me is that as I am doing my healing work, that I'm healing the lineage, like I am healing my children, the things that pass through me to them. Mm-hmm. And that healing also goes up the strand of DNA as well. And so the way I can put it into words, it's like, imagine, you know, my mother and father being able to choose if they want to receive the healing that I am doing. Mm-hmm. And my children automatically, it's like, it is there for them. Like they mm-hmm. would have to make a decision not to heal.
That's interesting. I never thought about it like moving back up.
That both are possible. Hmm. But what happens, the difference between the generations, right, is that in one place, it's like you have formed however many years, like my parents are in their 70s. So 70 years of their thinking and their perspective. And, you know, in some cases, you have people who are more mature or like, this is the way it is and it's the way it's going to be. And they're not as receptive to releasing some of the things that maybe have inadvertently held them to ideals or beliefs that are not serving them. Where children are still in their kind of place where they're desiring the best of what life has to offer. And so that's the best way I can explain the difference. And so I share that to just say like that healing is possible. The work that you're doing to heal is so beautiful. The spaces that you're creating for other people, your storytelling, it's so meaningful. And none of us have all of the answers or all of the clues that we desire. Like that to me would look like God sitting right here, the third window open on the podcast. Like, okay, so Bethany, let me tell you about these three things you don't know that, you know, your birth parents couldn't have told you, your adopted parents couldn't have told you. Like there are these other pieces. Anika, these are things, this is why you feel this in your body that you haven't connected yet. Like none of us have all those pieces. But I feel like ever since you and I have been having the conversation and you've been sharing your personal journey from years ago, it is just not lost on me how difficult it is to not just, you know, people can withhold information, but it's different if you don't even know where to go to even start having that conversation. Yeah. And I just want people to have the best of what life has to offer them and experiences that really help them to move through what they've gone through mm-hmm. so that they can be open to the possibilities of what's ahead. Yeah. And I honor that your work is doing exactly that for so many. So I'm so grateful. I know we are close to time. I would love it if you would just talk about Otito for a moment because we haven't touched on that. Wearing one of my favorite bracelets. Everybody knows I am known for my bracelets.
I will. So Oh, Tito. I'll try to give you like my 60-second synopsis of Oh, Tito. So Oh, Tito, let me go back. In 2000, when I was originally kicking off my search, okay, in 2000, 24 years ago, I started to say I was out of college. My parents no longer were in charge of, you know, all my decision-making. I was living on my own. And I said, I'm going to start a search and reunion and see if I can get any information on my adoption. And somewhere along the way, I got papers from the adoption agency back in 2000. This is not going to be 60 seconds. I just realized I lied.
Okay.
I'll try it because I love the story so much. Oh, good. So let me tell it. Thank you. Thank you for letting me tell it.
Absolutely.
I don't even know if you know this piece of it, Anika, you may. So back in 2000, I had a roommate at the time. She was like the first other person that I ever met besides my brother I grew up with that was adopted, basically. And she also was from New York. And she was like, oh, there's this registry you can sign up. And if your birth mother said it was okay that you contact her, she will have signed up on this registry and they'll make a match. She got her match. My friend got her match. I did not get my match. Mine was totally closed. No shot. So I called the adoption agency and I was like, can I get any information at all? And they're like, no, you cannot, but we'll tell you just a little bit of non-identifying information in your yellowing archive. And part of that was you were named when you were born. I didn't know this because my name's Bethany. Mm-hmm. I found out that actually I was named, and in the record at the adoption agency, it said my name was Angelina. So in 2000, I was hand making bracelets at the time. Okay. And I made myself little business cards. I was a flight attendant at the time, but on the side, I figured I'd have me a little side hustle. Mm-hmm. And I started Angelina's Accessories and I made up that company name. Have I told you this story before? So my very first sort of tippy toe into the jewelry manufacturing and making business, I named my company Angelina Accessories because I had just gotten this little piece of information. So that tells you 24 years ago, how long I've been like obsessing over who I am and where I come from and wanting to have like some sort of tethered something. Mm. So fast forward in 2022, I'm leaving corporate. My father passed. I'm sort of sorting through all this like new adoptee experience information that's available for me and whatnot. I wind up finding out my neighbor at the time was from Nigeria. They're Nigerian. And I showed them my ancestry DNA. And I said, look, it says I'm from Nigeria. Like, do you know who are my people? I'm you. I'm like, who am I? What am I looking for? And they were like, oh yeah, you're you come from the Yoruban people.
So do I.
Yoruban?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, keep going.
And
Yoruba.
I was I reached out actually to Ekene. Mm-hmm. I reached out to Ekene because I was like, you know Africa, you go to Africa, tell me anything. Do you know any Yoruban people? I need to go to Africa and meet my people. And anyway, she connected me with this like beautiful Yoruban sister. And mm-hmm. I asked her what the word was for truth. And she said, Oto. Mm. And then like, she kind of said another little bit of a slang sort of like Oto, Otito. So I rebooted I wanted to start like my jewelry business and start getting into that all again anyway. And so I literally named my company Otito, which was truth in Yoruban, which is where I descend from on the side that everybody else wanted to hide.
Whew, come on now.
I am not hiding this and you cannot hide it anymore. And love you, mom and dad. You can't hide it. Like nobody is hiding this from me anymore. And
way to stand in your truth.
Mm-hmm, I was like in your face. I was so happy to be like, I mean, I really was. I was like, this is the piece that everybody wanted to hide. Mm. And I'll also say, let me just say this too, because I also think this matters. I found out that, so my birth mother is white and Jewish. My birth father is black and he was Catholic. Well, he's Christian. I'll say Christian now. And, you know, I was like, I am descended from slaves. I am descendant of Holocaust survivors. Like, I am a real badass. And on my best days, I remember that.
Survivors and overcomers.
Yeah. On my best days, I'm like, you come from resilient, really strong people on both sides. I did also dig in. I remember when I found out that my birth mother was Jewish, my friends were like, you know, you're Jewish because your mother's Jewish and it goes through your mother. So I was like, hey, I called all my I'm like, somebody bring me to Passover this year with you because I just found out I was Jewish. You know, so I really did. It was all there. My issue, the reason why I'm like focused on my African side is because that's who people tried to keep. My Black dad is who people tried to keep out of the equation. My Black side is who people lied or withheld
about.
So I will amplify that now. I'm proud and I'm excited. And, you know, and I hear a lot from other adoptees that were maybe born in Asian countries or things like that, that they just, it just gets erased. Like they change your name, they remove your culture. You have shame because you can't even speak the language, even though you have the look on your face. Mm. All of this stuff is so hurtful and painful. And I hope everybody can open up their Otitos or whatever they need to do to pay homage to who they are. So, you know, whenever I tell my story, I kind of tell the little joke. I'm like, yeah, I was born a Black Jew and raised a white Christian. And, you know, I've just been like this. I feel like there's just been so much conflict. And I've been fighting. I feel like the stories and the people and like everything in me to me has been like, you will find us and you will heal because you will know the truth about who you are, like whose blood is flowing through your veins. And I feel really, really strongly about that. So you talk about my kids, like they were the first biological people that I ever was tied to mm-hmm. are my children. I never knew biological.
My family, God.
Till I had my baby.
My God.
Yeah, it's weird. And you know, anyway, I could go on forever, but I know we could go on forever, but I'm just so thankful for you because you've been such a big part of my personal and professional and executive journey and just so much stuff I feel like I have just received from you. So thank you for always holding space for me.
It's been my honor. And I would say in response to what you just shared, there's such beauty in your being the bridge, you know, and like the white Jew, the Black mm-hmm. Black Christian, and you know, talking about all of that. And it's like, as your healing continues, it goes from loggerheads, right? It just this beautiful embrace.
I love like you saying the word bridge. The word bridge came up for me a lot, like when I was conceptualizing Otito. I was like, I want to go to all corners of the world and I want to find people that need some amplification and bridge these different communities and cultures and, you know, through arts and artisans and like creativity, everything you said. But the word bridge to me comes up a lot, especially now. I mean, in this world, white, Black, Jewish, Christian, are you kidding me? I'm like, I do feel very much so an, I stand in the intersection of all of it. And that is now my identity. So when people ask me now what I am, oh, somebody asked me what I was. Let me just tell you this, at a wedding, after I did my ancestry search and after I had my reunion with my birth father and somebody said, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, oh, let me tell you. Cause I know now. It was like the first time I ever got that question since I knew. And I sat him down and I talked his ear off. And his family was like, well, I'll never ask anybody that question again.
Rightfully so.
I know.
Or ask it the way you really want to know. What you really ask.
I always do make sure. I'm like, I'm from Chicago. And if that doesn't like make them happy, if they're like, I mean, where are you really from?
Really
like, then what you're really asking is, yeah. I mean, I talked to him for 20 minutes. I told him the whole story.
I love it. It's another opportunity for people to expand their perspective and grow in empathy.
Oh, yeah. I love Bethany, you. Thank you.
I love you. I'm going to make sure that all of your contact information is in the show notes so that people know how to reach out to you. We didn't talk a lot about Bethany's marketing brilliance, but she is phenomenal in what she does. her corporate clients agree. The entrepreneurs that have utilized her that I know agree. I just spent time in conversation with her a week ago. And so I don't know how much room she has on her dance card, because I know that we are very actively trying to fill it up. But if you're interested in learning more about what she does, we'll make sure the website is there as well. Yeah. And please, 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 go out and listen to the Adoptee Diaries. Put it on your podcast list, share it, talk about it, and find some spaces to open conversation, because there is so much that we can heal through the power of storytelling. Bethany, 1 minute left. One or two tips that you have for people to live their most remarkable life?
I'll go with what my sort of, I'll say, pillars of Adoptee Diaries is, right? Be truthful. Try to be trusting until somebody tells you not to be. I'll even borrow from our friend Don Ruiz Miguel. Don't make assumptions. Don't take it personal.
Yep.
Right? Be true to your word. I try to live by those four agreements from Don Ruiz Miguel as much as possible. And it is like life. It really is. They sound so simple, but making assumptions, it's done nothing. Making comparisons, has done nothing but hurt me. So actively being aware that I tend to do it 1,000 times a day if I'm not being like intentionally aware and not trying to do it. So be remarkable, I think, requires you to stand up. It might feel a little nerve-wracking. I wouldn't do any of this as an anxious, if I listened to my inner critic. Right? So like lose the fear, throw the fear in the fire, forget it with the assumptions. Don't try to take everything personal. You know, maybe my parents didn't intentionally mean to hurt me. And if I lived from a place of they hurt me and I'm a victim of something that they did, you know, it could spin out of control. We make up these stories. So stop making up stories.
Yeah.
Make your own story based on your information from your experience and your perspectives. And like kind of cut out all the other noise. I think once I started to do that, I was able to focus on what matters to me, identify those core values, and you know, I'm on the right path.
Yeah, you are.
So
thank you so much, my friend. And thank you all for tuning in. And we look forward to seeing you next week on the Remarkably Me podcast. Peace and blessings.